Welcome back to America's Heroes Group Roundtable. We are globally connected with Kaiser Health News. April is Sexual Assault Awareness and National Deaf History Month. Pay attention to these issues and support them in the ways you can. Today is Saturday, April 3rd, 2021. Our host is Cliff Kelly, the governor of Talk Radio. I am his co-host, Colonel Dr. Damon Arnold. Our executive producer is Glenda Smith, and our digital media producer is Manny Carazzari. Today we have a special panelist with us who is going to be talking about a very, very important subject for our veterans. I'm hoping people are listening up and their family members about this issue. So Michael McAuliffe is a son of a Vietnam veteran, an independent journalist, and a political reporter, and a congressional correspondent. Today's discussion is Michael Kaiser's Health News article, in which he mentioned the military exposed to toxic fumes from burn pits, set to get bipartisan boost. This is something that is really near dear to all of us who've been over there, who served, who were exposed to those fumes. So thank you, Michael, for what you have been doing in the journalistic world to make sure attention is brought to this issue. So why don't you tell us what is going on now with the lawmakers?
Well, there's a whole bunch of bills that are moving through Congress, and it's sort of hard to describe them all, but there's a handful of sort of smaller ones that make it a little bit easier for veterans to apply for benefits if they believe they were harmed by burn pits and the exposure. But there's three pretty big ones that would go a lot farther to helping a lot more people. And one is, I think it's sponsored by Tom Tillis out of North Carolina and a number of Democrats, maybe Maggie Hassan and some others. But it would grant benefits to a lot of people, except it sort of still leaves the process in the hands of the Veterans Administration and the Secretary to determine, like, what are the illnesses that apply and you know, how would they go about applying and things like that. And then there are a couple of other bills. And the one that I really focused on when I wrote that story last week was this measure that Marco Rubio and Kirsten Gillibrand are going to put out next week that would sort of have a list of 10 or 12 illnesses that are already covered. And the only thing that a veteran would have to do to prove that they apply for that particular illness is show that they were in one of the places where they had the burn pits. And, you know, in the bill last year, there were, I think, 34 different countries. In this particular bill, they're just going to have to show the medal that you get for serving at least a month in one of any of these theaters. So it should make it relatively simple for someone who's got a lung problem or cancer or something like that to go to the VA and say, here I am, here's where I served, and I'm sick, so get me some help. So that's sort of what a lot of the veterans groups are pinning their hopes on. But there are some other measures. Elaine Loria from Virginia just came out with one that's very similar to the Gillibrand bill. Okay. It's got more things in it already, but there's no process there to add new illnesses as, like, science gets better and learns what veterans are actually getting sick from. So most of the people who I've heard about really like the Rubio-Gillibrand measure the best.
Okay, really sounds good. It sounds like they are actually focusing on, let's give a remedy while people are still living. Because we know we had a lot of people from the Vietnam era, right, that were exposed to Agent Orange. And it's only not until recently that these legislation came through and people are being compensated. But there were many people who succumbed to that from their cancers or, you know, from other conditions that were initiated by the exposure.
Yeah, one of the editors I worked with on that story, her father ended up getting compensation about 5 years after he died.
Oh, my goodness. That's just tragic. Tragic.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you don't have to really suffer when you get back. And you made a comment in the it was really kind of interesting about, you know, Abraham Lincoln's words, too. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, I'll botch the slogan, but it's essentially that you have to take care of the widows and the orphans.
Right.
And the Veterans Administration has adopted that as their motto. So when people who are orphans or widows, you know, see the foot dragging and the long time that it takes to get any sort of benefits, care, compensation, you know, they don't really feel like the motto is being met.
Mm-hmm. You know, because it's really interesting. You just made me think about something, too. And, you know, I'm a medical doctor, but I was in the military for about 26 years and did two combat mm-hmm. tours over in Iraq. And, if I were to, be approached by the VA to discharge someone, that would happen in 24 hours, right? 48 hours, 72 hours. You know, you have diabetes, you're no longer a fit to duty. but when it comes to diagnosing something that arose from an injury or from, combat-related exposures, then it's years mm-hmm. and years and years. It doesn't make any sense to me.
It doesn't make any sense. You know, I saw a really good story that McClatchy put out just a couple of days ago. With an interview with one of the medical officials at the VA who's been there since before 9/11, she said they knew that there would be problems with troops, exposed to toxins, and they did a lot to try and figure out what those problems were going to be. They were studying them. They still are studying them. So that came as a really big surprise to a lot of the people who've been trying to argue that, I got exposed to all kinds of burning trash and I'm sick. So they were really surprised to learn that. And the hang-up seems to be the scientific proof. How do you prove that a specific illness was caused by an exposure? That's a very difficult thing to do. It takes decades of study to be definitive with something like that.
Yeah, and when I was in Iraq, one of the things that really came to mind with it is that we had burn pits there, and what they would do is have burn pits in our own areas, right, the cantonment areas and that kind of thing, to burn trash and refuse. But they also had burn pits in enemy camps, or in cities that were blowing through our area. And the question I always had was if I had a weapon, I would use the smoke to see where if I'm have the right direction. It's a directional agent. And then I don't know, you have no idea of what they were adding to that. We know that Saddam Hussein used chemical agents on his own people. We saw that in Syria. We saw that in Iraq. And so, yeah. There's no telling what kinds of things they were adding to this, into these burn pits. And it was very toxic, and you had this, we used to call it the muck, but almost everyone over there had some sort of involvement with their sinuses or felt sick, to the stomach, because you had this almost like talcum powder floating through the air all the time. And I always wondered if that particulate matter could adhere, some of these chemicals. And we were around jet fuel, from the helicopters and, the vehicles. And so it seems like it's a perfect disaster, sitting there waiting to happen. And, and actually when we were coming back, when we were being redeployed, they had us fill out questionnaires about were you exposed to certain things, because we knew we had to fill it out because we were exposed to tritium in a particular accident that happened in the area I was in. And so, but you never hear anything again. So this is 2021. I filled out paperwork out in 24 and 5 when I was over in Iraq, and in 26-7 when I was in Iraq, and I haven't heard a word about what that meant.
Well, it's in a file cabinet somewhere and in a database probably. It's probably something that someone ought to file a FOIA request to see if there's any kind of statistical analysis of all that.
Oh, yes. And that might make another investigative report for you. But so what do you think we should be doing? What, how can people get involved in this? Is this something that you think that we should be more, one thing is knowledge, which you've brought to the table, so people understand mm-hmm. that this is a big issue. But how can veterans get more involved? Should they be going onto the website, because you were mentioning there's a website, for burn pit registration and all those kinds of things.
That's something that's run by the VA, and they sort of do that as almost a data analysis tool. They want to see what's out there. And a couple thousand more people registered after that story came out. So I hope they saw it went there. But there's about 240,000 almost, about 237,000 people who have registered, but there's at least 3.5 million people who the VA thinks has been exposed. And that data is from 2015, and they still use burn pits, so it's got to be higher than that by now. You know, as far as what people should do, if you're a veteran, you know, certainly go register. But getting attention to things like this is really difficult. And I noticed even covering the 9/11 stuff for many years, you know, Americans, you know, they care about their heroes, they care about their veterans, and they care about when their firefighters and police officers are sick, but they don't necessarily always want to have it in their face that they're sick and not being taken care of, right? It's like they got enough bad news in their lives already. So
yeah, that makes
the
sense.
Thing that mm-hmm. seems to, mm-hmm. yeah, you know, so the thing that seems to really break through is when veterans who are really good at telling their own personal stories will come out and talk about them in the press. And, you know, there's going to be a big press conference next week on the 13th in Capitol Hill. And they've got John Stewart as their sort of marquee guest. And, you know, that kind of star power certainly helps focus people's attention.
Yes.
You know, when he speaks, people listen. You know, it's like, what's the E.F. Hutton was the old commercial way back in the day?
That's
you
right.
know, now it's John Stewart.
Yes.
You know, so, but those are the things, you know. I mean, I wrote about a really interesting person.
Yes,
you know, Will Thompson, and he lives out in West Virginia, and he's such a remarkable person. Like, he had his lungs removed, you know, twice, right. you know, and he's really dedicated his life not just to surviving, but sort of trying to raise awareness to what's happening with the issue. And it's such an incredible tale, you know. It's like he's managed to get his health care benefits, right. but he still can't get a military retirement because of the way the bureaucracy works in the military, which, as I'm sure you know, is really complicated. And, you know, it's how many years did you have here? Or how many years were you there? You know, and can we rule that this was really service related? It's really a morass of red tape. And he's just not going to get that retirement until he's 60 years old and probably not alive anymore.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Because I was reading that story, and that your words in that story with this brought like tears to my eyes about what he had to go through mm-hmm. and what he's still going through. And
you know, after that story, actually, while I was like going back and forth with him, he was apparently having some sort of mild stroke.
Right.
you know, it was hard to get in touch with him because he's like, "I'm sorry, I haven't been feeling well. I have a migraine." So he went to the hospital, and it was a stroke. A mild stroke that he had because when they removed a cancerous growth on his skin, it aggravated something and gave him a mild stroke. And the cancer is because of the immunosuppressants that he takes.
Right.
because he has, you know, transplanted lungs.
Yeah.
So it's just, you know, and it all goes back to the burn pits. And it's just such a hard thing to deal with. You know, you're dealing with bureaucracy, you're dealing with health. You're dealing with people who have no idea that this is a problem, you know, so it's a real tough road to walk.
Yeah, and I've seen so many people who've come back that, you know, before they went into service and overseas, they didn't have, you know, symptoms of asthma or, you know, respiratory issues. And when they got back, even, you know, connective tissue disorders and other disorders, because these toxins, you know, they come from metal cans, they come from, you know, things that people were just throwing out, asbestos containing, you know, instruments or equipment. And there was no EPA over there. Right. So you don't know what actually was being thrown into these burn pits. Sometimes you, you know, had accelerants and other things, you know, an ordnance that was, you know, unexploded.
Well, they light them all with jet fuel.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. And those things would be really toxic to our bodies. We know mm-hmm. that certain things are related to things like lymphoma, leukemia, you know, the you know, the benzenes and all of those kinds of things have been shown. We know from, you know, environmental studies and work studies, workplace studies. So my background was internal mm-hmm. medicine and occupational medicine. So there are direct links between some of these organic chemicals and cancers, we know.
Yeah, well, there's reasons you can't have an open burn pit in the United States, right?
Right.
You can't just throw your trash into a football field-sized crater and burn it, you know?
That's right.
We have big fights and rules about that.
That's right. And it's that's when the NIMBY group comes out, right? Not in my backyard.
Right.
They say, move that stuff away from me. Because we do know that they has health implications. actually in Chicago we have one area that is where the asthma rate is six times the average, the national average, and they're right around the factories and industries right in that area. And so people are, you know, it could be environmental, but yeah, it probably is. It's certainly not genetic or anything else. So we need to really look at these service members returning and take it seriously. And, you know, PTSD and all those other mental illnesses have a tendency to be sort of overlooked, or, you know, people have to sit there and prove that this is actually something that's happening mm-hmm. with them. And so even these chemicals have potentials for affecting the central nervous system. We don't know. We haven't done enough, research on this. But you would think by 20 years later, you know, nearly 20 years later, we would be thinking about it at least, or trying to explore it.
Well, it just even anecdotally, it's pretty obvious that something is going on. And one of the doctors that I talked to in that story, his name is Anthony Zemma.
Yes.
He worked with veterans in his residency and shortly thereafter. And as he described it, you know, when he'd walk into his waiting room, there would be a bunch of, you know, guys who were, you know, 90, and just a lot of old people, right? Because they were, you know, Vietnam and even you know, earlier wars, Korea. All of a sudden, in 2004, his waiting room was full of 20-somethings.
Yes.
You know, he had this, his what he calls his sort of his marquee case, his incident case, was this former football player from Nassau County on Long Island, who was just, you know, a terrific athlete, and he went into the military, you know, fought in Iraq, and he came home and he could barely walk and breathe. And that's sort of the first thing that said, he's like, wow, something is terrible. Is this really going on over there? And he's just had so many people now who have come back with terrible lung problems in particular. Those are the most obvious ones and the ones that show up the soonest. So it's like, and there's huge spikes in cancer amongst, you know, what the VA is treating. It's just, even if you don't have all of the scientific data, there's just an overwhelming amount of personal stories and sort of details that suggest that something very different is going on with these veterans.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that, you know, Congresswoman Duckworth gets involved with this as well. You know, she has her own story to tell about the trauma she, you know, survived with the Iraq War. I know her personally, but she, you know, I'm hoping that we hear more from our veteran, legislators as well to make sure. Bobby Rush is another one, you know, who served in the military. But we need to.
I didn't know he was in the military.
Yes, that's right. Yes, United States Army, and so we need to have those people step forward and say enough is enough. We need to have a solution for this, and you know, we seem to find the answers for everything else we need to do when the issue arises. You know, we can spend $6 trillion on COVID, which is well spent. We need to make sure we take care of everyone. But, you know, we need to take care of the veterans as well. And not to do that is a travesty. It's really a blemish on the history of our nation.
Well, I mean, you know, the one thing with the sort of silver lining of all the money that we're spending on COVID is I think the billions that it will take to deal with this problem aren't going to feel quite so large, you know, after a couple of $2 trillion packages went to Congress, because it will be very expensive to properly deal with this problem. But I think the sticker shock won't be quite as bad as, say, it was when the 9/11 bills were first going through. And, like, they tried to get, right, I think it was around $8 billion for the first bill, and they had to cut that down to $4 billion, and it was really wasn't even enough for 5 years. Yes. You know, then they had to come back again, and then they had to come back a third time. So if you really put the money into it that's required for something like this, which is frankly a lot larger than the impact of 9/11, because there are many, many more veterans who went to war than folks who were in lower Manhattan or even who came as first responders from around the country. There's just many more people. So I would imagine that the cost will be significantly higher, you know, many billions.
Yeah. And one thing that's not often talked about is that we have veterans who are over there for two tours, three tours, four tours, five tours, six tours. That's like 6 years. And your exposure level, you know, is increasing over time too, right? The more you are in that theater and you're being exposed to these chemicals, there is a, you know, a timeline on that as well.
How big were the pits that where you were serving? Because like I didn't understand how big these things were, because they're apparently just massive. And a hole that you dig in your backyard, they could fill a football stadium. Some of the really big ones.
Oh, they're huge, really huge.
Yeah.
You know, I was in Iraq in Mosul. Went to Talil, Abu Ghabi. You know, the prison thing. We had to do some flights in there. So I was with a mechanized striker brigade, infantry, and then went back, you know, as a helicopter flight surgeon, you know, for, you know, doing a lot of cross-border missions and doing some things that we needed to do, transporting people, prisoners and such. And so...
Well, if you were in that Camp Victory complex, that giant complex around Baghdad, they were burning something like 180,000 pounds of trash a day.
Yes,
in that pit.
Oh yeah, it's just absolutely horrendous what was going on. And the thing, as I was mentioning before, you could tell. I mean, the odor from that was just unconscionable. I mean, you smelled the stuff, and it was just. And one of the things that we don't talk about is the vehicles were very heavy, tanks and. You know, other vehicles that, you know, 2.5-ton trucks and that kind of thing. And what ends up happening is that those vehicles grind the sand into a powder. So every time you take a step, it's almost like, you know, you see this talcum powder raising up into the air, and people are breathing this stuff in. And so so if you were actually in a maneuvers and you were running, you were just in this cloud. As you were you know, moving around, and it had a distinct odor and taste to it. But when the smoke came through, you know, we would have it coming from, you know, the cities in Mosul, and they would come right through our camp. I mean, and they actually would send helicopters out there to suppress them, to stop them from doing that. And I was, you know, really on top of that because I was, you know, in charge of the combat medical things there. And, you know, I said, this is just we should not have this coming through the camp because we don't know what's in it. And so we responded really pretty rigorously with that. And they had tires that were burning. They had everything that you could think of burning in those pits. So, but we're running out of time. So I just want you to just tell me a little bit more about what people should do. I'm going to be following your tagline. I was so impressed by the article that you wrote. But where can people find out more information, you know, get in touch with your streaming and what your initiative is?
Well, I mean, the people who I found there's lots of great veterans groups out there, but the one that I got lots of great information from was a group called Burn Pits 360.
Okay.
And if you put in Burn Pits 360 into the internet, you'll find them pretty quickly. It's run by a woman named Rosie Torres and her husband, Leroy Torres, who is also a veteran. And he's why she's in this, because he got sick over there and he had to stop working as a police officer and, you know, all kinds of battles to get retirement and things like that. But they ended up starting this group, and they actually have a much better registry than the VA does.
Really?
That's how hard they've been working on this. Yeah, so they're a great resource. There's lots of information on their website, but you know, all the veterans groups have a lot of information on this. You know, the Iraq, Afghanistan veterans, they've got a great section on it. You know, the Wounded Warrior folks have a great big section on it. All of those groups will have information.
So this legislation is now active. It's coming up for this, I guess, session, right? That they're going to be looking at this, yeah. Oh, great, great.
Yeah.
Well, you know, thank you again, Michael McAuliffe. And, you know, I just, you know, thank you for your service, because as a family member with your father for the Vietnam era, and independent journalist, political, you know, reporter and congressional correspondent, you're worth your weight in gold. But we're going to be moving on to the next segment. And stay with us. America's Heroes Group is going to be back very shortly.